powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
Happy Thursday. We got a three-hour show today. We're sending you to Cactus League play. You're going to hear some day baseball coming up at 1 p.m. before we get to it. Are the Hawks missing the boat on free agency, Bump? I put a poll out on X. Still call it Twitter.
Good job.
And I said, guys, help me out for our open today. How are you feeling about the Seahawks free agency so far? And I gave four answers. It took me a while to think of the four answers. I said angry, pleased, disappointed, or indifferent. There are 254 votes. I only put it out 10 minutes ago. Indifferent is leading with 51% of the vote.
Angry is leading?
Indifferent.
Oh, indifferent. Okay.
Next up, disappointed.
Yeah.
Angry is the least because it's like, what are you going to be angry about? But there are some answers. 1.8% of responders pleased with the second least. But most people either indifferent or disappointed.
I think that's pretty fair. I think disappointed because you see a lot of these big names kind of get snatched off the free agent market, and you think your team is doing nothing to stay in the fight. And you and I or everyone else doesn't really know the approach of the Seahawks if they are having these conversations. And people got to remember, too, these guys have to want to come to Seattle. Mm-hmm. There are some question marks in Seattle, believe it or not. As much as we love the hire of Mike McDonald, as much as we love having Geno back and we look at the guys who are here, there's some uncertainty because you don't know what this organization is going to look like without Pete Carroll. So I get that. Me personally, I think I'm kind of, I wouldn't say indifferent. I wouldn't say angry. I wouldn't say
underwhelmed.
I would say I am
patient.
I'm cautious.
Okay.
I'm cautious.
That's a good word.
Because
why cautious?
I think that there's still some things that need to be done and that are going to be done. So I don't want to jump to any conclusions. I do that enough with the Mariners, right? I jump to conclusions all the time and
with
I get myself all riled up and I go, what are they doing? And then a month or two later, I go, oh, I get it. I understand it. So I'm going to be cautious with how I approach this. But when you look at other teams, I'm looking at, obviously we use PFF when it supports anything we want to do, right? Mm-hmm. I'm looking at just the Commanders who had almost about the same amount of cap space that the Seahawks have. They didn't sign Ertz, Louisville, Eckler, a kicker, McManus, Cleveland Farrell, Edge, Marcus Mariota, Tyler Ott, even a long snapper, safety, Jeremy Chin, Jeremy Reeves, Bobby Wagner. I'm looking at the Commanders and I go, they are making moves. Now, they're a bit more desperate or, I guess, eager to make these moves because of what their past has been the last few years. And then I look at teams like the Houston Texans who are making moves as well. So you have to do what your parents tell you not to do. Like, don't compare your life to someone else's life because you have greatness here. They have greatness there. That's what I'm trying to do is listen to my mom, Mama Bump, Renee Bumpus, and not compare our lives, our situations, and say, be thankful for what we have now. And what we have right now is an offense who I think is ready to go. You line them up right now, they're good, but the defense, that needs some work.
I liked this one answer from one responder. Did we meet all of our needs? Not hardly. Are there obvious solutions in the draft? Do I trust that there's a plan? Maybe. We'll see. That's football. Like, I kind of like the idea of mm-hmm. being like, sometimes the draft class, sometimes the free agency class just falls in a way where you have to be creative and you have to take moves you aren't especially excited about. Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus, speaking of, joined us yesterday, Bump, and we asked him, hey, what do you think of the approach so far for the Seahawks? Because it's certainly not one, like you mentioned, that the Texans are taking, that Washington is taking.
Doing what the Seahawks have done in terms of shopping in the kind of lower echelons of free agency and not going after the crazy price guys at the top is the best way of doing business in free agency. I think you tend to get the best value contracts going about it in that way. But you're right. Sometimes your needs just don't align with where the free agent class is and where the money is going. So I think Seattle may have run into that to a degree, that the areas that they would want to spend if they were spending, there's just not a great group of free agents this year, or the ones that were there got picked off either right at the start of free agency or went back.
The went back thing at the end is also really important. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys re-signed with their teams and re-signed to contracts that Seattle wouldn't have been able to afford anyways, right? Chris Jones was not going anywhere.
That wasn't even a thought. If you thought the Hawks ran for Chris Jones.
Absolutely not. I'm so sorry.
Welcome to reality.
Chris Jones was not going anywhere. Some of these guys were not going anywhere. Baker, who's never a part of the conversation, but Mike Evans both stay in Tampa Bay. Dalton Schultz stays with the Texans. I mean, there were so many moves for teams to retain guys that were most important to them. Leonard Williams stays with Seattle, and that was their big signing. I understand a feeling of disappointment. And for me, caution makes sense because I'm wondering what they're doing at linebacker. It makes me very nervous. And if they would have signed Patrick Queen, I'd be like, perfect free agency. You upgraded at linebacker, someone who had a career year last year, a pro bowler who knows Mike McDonald and his system. And then you kept one of your better defensive linemen. Wonderful. And instead, I'm saying, okay, you hung on to one of your better defensive linemen. You're bringing in some backups, which is great. I'm wondering who's in the middle of your defense, because I really thought you'd hang on to Bobby Wagner. We'll get to that a little bit later at 10:45. But I understand that kind of caution, that kind of even to the extent of disappointment. But I'm still hanging on to what Sam Monson said with, look, you could argue the way the Seahawks are approaching this is a great way to approach it. That no matter what, it's a low risk, high reward thing where if you have Pharaoh Brown have a career high 500 yards for you, you got more than you paid for. That kind of approach.
Yeah,
what
that
do you
sounds
think?
Good. That sounds good. And you hope that happens. That's kind of what we do with the Mariners every year is hope that, you know, the picks that didn't happen, you emotionally let that go and hope that the guys that they did pick up exceed expectations. And that is why you have scouting departments. That is why you have a group of 30 coaches who put their minds together and say, what type of player are we looking for? Let's see if Pharaoh Brown kind of checks the box. And honestly, I like the Pharaoh Brown pick. If you watch his film, again, the numbers aren't going to wow you when it comes to him, but he's a good tight end. And I said it yesterday, you don't hang around the NFL for 7 years on accident because you're getting lucky. No, you hang around because you can play the game, you're reliable, and you do your job. I'm hoping that the Hawks are able to take them to the next level. That is what true development programs do. They take guys who are pretty good or young, and you help them get to that next level. With the moves that have been made and haven't been made, that's what I think the approach of this team is. It's like, look, we're not going to spend a lot of money in a few places. We're going to spread it thin, and we are going to evaluate and develop these guys. And I'm okay with that because, again, we wanted Patrick Queen. That didn't happen. If we didn't get Leonard Williams, then I would be frantic. I'd really be asking what's going on. You don't have linebackers out there or on your squad right now. You do, but no starters. I wanted Bobby to be here, but again, I understand why he's not here. Here's something Mike McDonald has to do as well. He's got to make this team his. From getting rid of Bobby Wagner, letting Jamal Adams go, letting Diggs go. Now, there are some financial attachments to all that stuff as well. But you also got to understand that sometimes you need to get rid of the guys who were staples in the other guy's era. And that's why I look at Bobby Wagner and say, okay, I get it. The only thing that baffles me is that there were some guys out there. Azeez Al-Shaair was available, nothing. Deshaun Phillips was there, nothing. These are all linebackers. Mm-hmm. Jordan Hicks was there, nothing. And then Nicholas Morrow is there, nothing. I'm looking at the guys who are available, and I go, all right, they for sure are banking on developing these young men because we don't know too much about them.
Mm-mm, that's absolutely right. I really like you bringing up the head coach as a factor here. From the 206, we lost so many of our own free agents to mediocre contracts. I wouldn't say all mediocre. Like Damian Lewis got a pretty nice deal, like Colby Parkinson, but I think they just don't want to be here anymore without Pete. That could be part of it, right? Free agency is also about where someone else wants to go. For instance, it's far more common in college for players to follow a head coach to another school than it is in the pros, obviously. I think that there is something to both Geno Stone and Patrick Queen staying in the AFC North. Like, I would imagine that there is something to facing your former team, to staying in the division that you know, these opponents that you know. That's just my guess. I don't think it says anything about Mike McDonald. I do, though, think there is something to what you're saying about a new regime, a new head coach, and less about, oh, we don't want to be here without Pete, though that could be part of it. Mm-hmm. And more about John Schneider's decision-making and whether or not those guys were here and not a little bit too long, but like, was it the perfect vision of the team John Schneider wanted?
I'm sure it wasn't exactly what Schneider wanted, because he was working hand in hand with Pete Carroll. And just like any relationship, right, you got to sacrifice some of the things that you want to make sure that your partner is good to go. So that, I think that definitely plays some type of factor in it. John Schneider is never going to come out and say, yeah, he wasn't my guy, so we let him go.
Oh, of course.
He's come out and said, what, they were both of our guys.
Yeah, he said John, everyone in the building. He's
exactly, because John is a good leader, and that's what you're supposed to do. But this is the exciting part for John Schneider, because for the first time in 14 years, he gets to, and he's going to defer to Mike and the gang at times, but for the most part, he's going to lead the charge and say, all right, this is what I think makes a great team. I wish that the Hawks came out and let us know what the business plan is. You know, the Mariners came out and we're like, look, 3 years, man, and we're good to go. Mm-hmm. So now we're holding them accountable. Okay, three years, where we at? You exceed expectations, then you drop a little bit. It's rare that in football you have organizations come out and give you a timeline, because it is more likely for a bottom feeder team to add a few players in football and then compete for the division title or maybe sticking to the playoffs. Baseball's a bit different. You got single A, double A, triple A, and all that stuff. Guys got to stay healthy, pitches or whatnot. It's just a different type of journey. So we're not going to see that. I wish or hear that. I wish we could hear that from John. I wish we knew, okay, is he thinking, okay, 10-win season this year, getting to the playoffs this year, or is he thinking, let's just build this defense, hang on for a year, and see what happens.
All right. Well, poll results haven't changed. Still out there. Indifferent. The number one, even twice as many votes, it's still 51%. People still giving the same answers as far as indifferent. I get it. You have been looking at, I wanted to focus on one of the actual signings. So you mentioned looking at Pharaoh Brown and liking what you see from him on tape. You also looked at Rayshon Jenkins and really liked what you saw from him. Outside of Leonard Williams, who was an important signing, and to me means that this team is not tanking. This team is not saying, 2025. Giving Leonard Williams a ton of money it's hard to plan out a three-year plan in football the same way you can in baseball, mm-hmm. because you miss out on 75% of rookie contracts when you do that. So I think the Seahawks have every intention of competing and being as competitive as they possibly can this year. Does Rayshon Jenkins, does some of these smaller signings help them do that in your mind?
Yeah, for sure. A lot of people don't know who Rayshon Jenkins is. I had to look him up. Not familiar with the name, but not really his game, bars. And he had 101 tackles last year, 2 interceptions, 1 sack, 9 passes defended. I watched maybe 2.5 games last night and just trying to get a feel for this dude. And when you think of a Mike McDonald safety, you automatically think that he has to be able to come down in the box and play. Most safeties have to at some point anyway, but we know that the Baltimore Ravens like to play with 3 safeties, same as the Hawks last year. This guy's going to be able to do that. I watched a film on him. He's a smooth type of football player, a for sure tackler. He does a great job of disguising his coverages. I mean, they could be in like a cover 6. So you got 4 to one side, 2 on the other side. And if he's not getting threatened, he won't sprint to get depth. He's smart with his eyes. I saw him working the left side of the field, but I know he's responsible for the cross on the right side of the field to number 3. Unless number 3 is flying across, he's not even paying attention. He sees the field. So I see this guy and I go, all right, this is a savvy football player who can play in this league. And I'm excited to see what he does, because the film don't lie. He's a good ball player.
All right, you guys. The noise is getting a little louder on a potentially big name coming to Seattle. I think this is really interesting. Plus, Richard Sherman calls out his former team. All that coming up in about 30 minutes. Right now, let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, Bobby Wagner is reuniting with Dan Quinn and Ken Norton Jr. in Washington on a 1-year deal. What's a real headline?
Inspired by Michael Bumpus. Call this year's Hawks defense Legion of Whom the hell is playing linebacker?
Yeah, I don't know.
We'd love to know.
I would love to know who. I mean, are we going to have to call Dave Wyman? What do we got going on here?
Yeah, and they're going to sign somebody. I don't think they're just going to roll with the guys that they have. It did hurt a little bit to see Bobby go to Washington, but you also understand why he's going over there. Dan Quinn, his guy, is there as well. And maybe he felt like he needed a fresh start, you know, get away from the organization because of all the change that's going down. But, yes, this is a position of concern So I will be looking at all the available options. I'll be watching as much film as I can just to see exactly who's out there. The worst part about this situation, is, Stacey, is that preparing for the show, and you know, you look up available linebackers, like, oh, cool, he's available. Let's watch film. Something tells me to check the team's website and go, oh, no, he just got signed like 5 hours ago, or 7 hours ago.
Such is free agency where, like, you'll be talking. I mean, literally, we had our open yesterday during headline rewrites talking about Patrick Queen and how that could potentially be a fit. And then during the break, he signed with the Steelers. And yeah. I was like, well, never mind.
It's hard out here.
Well, we've got the segment, I guess.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, the NFL is looking into potential tampering by the Eagles and Falcons related to their signings of Saquon Barkley and Kirk Cousins. What's the real headline?
Who could have seen this coming during a time that's literally called the legal tampering period?
You're telling me they were tampering when they should have been tampering?
Excuse me?
This can't stand.
Tampering happens all the time.
I mean, all the time.
Does the NFL really have agents out there that are going through Kirk Cousins' cell phone bill and seeing who he's communicating with? And I guarantee you, Kirk Cousins, his agent might be the smartest agent in the game. You see how much money he's getting? He got him a burner phone. Of course, there's tampering going on. That happens all the time. It's just funny that it's coming out this way. What are they going to do, though? What exactly are you going to do to the Falcons and the Philadelphia Eagles if they do find this to be true? I mean, Kirk Cousins pretty much admitted that he was talking to the staff over there with the Atlanta Falcons. It don't bother me at all. I mean, it doesn't affect me. I think deals are going to happen whether there's tampering or not. Teams know where they want to go. They know situations on paper. They know the financials. Not a big deal to me, but let's see what the NFL does.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, big trade in baseball yesterday as the Padres are acquiring Chicago White Sox ace Dylan Cease. What's the real headline?
Blake Snell, get ready to learn pinstripes, buddy. That continues to be one of the best fake quotes of all time.
That's the bummer of it all, is that Adam Silver didn't actually say, get ready to learn Chinese, buddy.
Oh, but it works every time. Yeah. It works every time. And it works as anti-jokes when people are like, your friend taking a class to learn Chinese, Mandarin. Get ready to learn Chinese, buddy. The Blake Snell to Mariners just ongoing saga is at least tampering down. Speaking of tampering,
he wants to be here.
He's not coming here.
I know, but
yeah, he was going to be here, if the Mariners wanted him here, he'd be here. He has been yelling from the rooftops, like Love Actually, holding up a sign outside of the Mariners' house saying, pick me, choose me, sign me,
he's
please.
Pulling an Earl Thomas, exactly. Saying, come get me.
I am begging you to come get me.
But now, the Yankees without Gerrit Cole for the first 2 months of the season.
Exactly.
And then they were reportedly, like, interested in Dylan Cease, who is now off to San Diego.
Which leaves, as the top available pitcher,
Blake Snell. And we know the Yankees could afford him. Like, they could afford him at any asking price.
It would be so... Why do you think that if you're Jerry DePoto, you wouldn't want Blake Snell here?
Age? I don't know.
Injury history?
Yeah, age, I think injury history.
Probably the length of the contract that he's asking for. As we know, like, that was a big thing with the Robbie Ray signing, is that they could have gotten out of that after what, year two? Or because the no trade clause that Robbie Ray had was gone after year two, and Ray said it himself where he's like, yeah, I did not expect to be there very long, even though I signed a 5-year deal with them. So maybe that's what the Mariners are balking at. Even I'm sure they're also balking at the asking price too. I'm sure Snell wants like north of $30 million.
Well, yeah, like the hometown discount doesn't mean that it'll be a price that you're actually going to like. And yeah. I think that unfortunately,
Snell signing for $10 million.
Yeah, I mean, we had Trevor May in studio yesterday. It was a great interview. It's going to be in hour four of our podcast from yesterday. And he was obviously growing up a Mariners fan. He was honest about, like, look, you kind of know what your team is. The Mariners have never been a team that's going to spend a lot, so you're always going to be, I'm paraphrasing what he said. We were talking about expectations. You're always going to be kind of on the verge of wondering if they can get it done. They're not signing Blake Snell.
No, they're not. I'm going to hold on to it until he's officially off the market, though. That's what I do with all these dudes. Like Bobby, I felt Bobby wasn't going to be back, but I go, you know what? I'm going to hold on to that.
No, you convinced me in my mind that Bobby might be back.
Yeah.
I thought for sure they were moving on.
Make complete sense for him to be back.
Yeah, because they didn't have anyone else. And I thought like, well, of course. Now, granted, he goes to the Commanders where he's familiar with Dan Quinn. You know, they're a horrible defense, building it up with some really nice pieces. He'll play alongside Frankie Louvu. It's a really nice, you know, looking squad on paper right now. We're going to talk about this more at 10:45, Bump, but I wonder how many people feel like the 253 here. It's a slap in the face to the city getting rid of Bobby, but a red flag to... Not only that, but a red flag to players who might come here, seeing that's the way new management might be treating players now.
Nah, I disagree completely. I think that there are reasons why they didn't sign Bobby. He's a little long in the tooth. He might not be able to do the things that they're asking or want that position to do. And you do want your guys in here. Mike McDonald is probably looking for a different type of linebacker or a younger type of linebacker. There are reasons for him not to be here, but there are also reasons for him to be here. As soon as you start seeing all these other linebackers just get knocked off the board, mm-hmm. Bobby becomes more and more attractive. At least to me, he became more and more attractive.
Same.
And it's just you need to fill that gap. And right now, there's a big gap in the middle of the field on that second level. And I don't know where they're going to go with it. I don't think they're going to draft a rookie and say, okay, you lead this defense. They got to go out and find somebody and probably draft a rookie. So they got some work to do.
Also, there's a bit of a difference this time to me. The first time it was releasing Bobby Wagner and a clear sign that they were moving on from Russ, moving on from Bobby, moving forward in this kind of different iteration of their team. This time, Bobby Wagner was a free agent who could test the market and choose where he wanted to sign. And the Seahawks, I'm guessing, weren't willing to offer what the Commanders were, or maybe he felt as though the Seahawks, you know, owed him a little more and, you know, chose the Commanders intentionally. I don't know what it was, but to me, free agency, choosing another place is different than being released.
Yeah. And we get, what, 8.5 he got over there with the Commanders?
I don't think it's disrespectful when you're a free agent. I can understand the way Bobby felt disrespected when he found out about his release through someone else and was mm-hmm. actually released by the team. Those are two different things to me.
I think this is honestly a clean breakup. It doesn't make sense to us because we're looking at the roster, but I think the Seahawks wanted to move on, and I think Bobby wanted to end his career with someone who helped make him the person he is today.
Well, Richard Sherman had some things to say about it. That's coming up at 10:45. Before we get to that, the noise getting louder on a big name to Seattle. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Noise is getting louder on Justin Fields as a potential trade target for the Seattle Seahawks. Take a listen to Dan Orlovsky.
Number one's the Seattle Seahawks. Number two, the Philadelphia Eagles. Number three, the Indianapolis Colts. Seattle losing Drew Lock and Geno with firmly being their starting quarterback. But Mike McDonald doesn't have any allegiance to Geno. And you just never know. And you want enough good players at that position. And I think Justin's proven more than enough to be worthy of, hey, a sixth or seventh round pick and $2.5 million.
That's Dan Orlovsky saying that the Hawks are his top destination for Justin Fields, with the Eagles being two, Colts being three. What do you think?
Said it yesterday. I'm in. I'm all in for it. Now, Justin went from he's going to be a starter in this league next year to he needs to go somewhere where he can develop. The Jalen Hurts, the Philadelphia situation, I don't think is ideal for Justin Fields because he's going to want to play here eventually. I think Seattle is ideal because you feel like Geno has 2 to 3 years left, and then we'll see what happens. Or maybe Justin can develop. Geno doesn't have the type of year that the Seahawks wants, and you can move on because Mike McDonald has no alliance to Geno. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think Seattle is a place that he should explore. The question is, how much is he going to be worth after that year? Because all you got is a year, and then you got to extend that, man. He is a first-round pick. He's going to require mm-hmm. at least $35, $40, $45 million to keep him here. So that's where it becomes tricky. Wherever he goes, you know the next year you have to pay him or you have to let him walk. So are you going to give him enough opportunity to show during that year if he can be your franchise quarterback?
That is exactly right, and exactly what Pro Football Focus's Sam Monson told us yesterday.
If he's a backup, he's probably only one for a year. It's a short-term rental because of the contract that he's on. You get one more year of pretty cheap deal for Justin Fields backup money, If you pick up his fifth-year option, it jumps to $25 million next season. That's sort of between top-end backup and low-end starter money. And then obviously after that, if you think he's the guy, you're paying him a big money contract going forward. So any team looking to bring in Justin Fields is probably only looking at it for a short-term, one-year type of deal. Or you think he can be a starter down the line.
Now, if you think he can be a starter down the line and you think that he might be up on your draft board if he were to be an option for you in this class, then fine, who cares? Mm-hmm. Give him that fifth-year option. You know, pay him, do whatever. But you have Geno as your starter. If you trade for Justin Fields, like a lower round pick, and then you bring him here and Justin Fields is just a backup, you won't even have the data in which you want to make that decision. What if Geno has a phenomenal year? Then you want Geno here for 2025. I mean, it creates a really weird situation in terms of the decision you're going to have to make a year from now.
It will honestly be similar to finding out if Geno's going to be your guy. Because what did they have to figure out if Geno was going to be the starter? All you had was training camp and preseason, and you say, okay, let's give him a shot. Granted, he was competing with Drew Lock. They're both kind of in the same boat. With this, it'd be a bit different. You are going to have training camp. You are going to have preseason. But because Justin Fields has 3 years of playing football already, you're going to have to rely on that film as well and say, does he have a higher ceiling than what we think Geno can be? Some website, I forget what this is, they put out three scenarios. They go, you're going to end up extending him 5 years, $265 million, $195 million in total guarantees, and $108 fully guaranteed. That is a big commitment for a guy who you're only going to see in training camp and during preseason. Sometimes that can be enough for some dudes, right? Russell Wilson, all he had was training camp and preseason. He comes out, he's a starter over here for 10, 11 years. Evaluation, that's where it's going to be huge. So I would expect, if Justin Fields were to end up over here, he's going to get, obviously, the majority of the snaps during the preseason. Geno, you might get a game or a series, and then whoever the camp quarterback is, you might not even play as much because you have to evaluate him. Wherever he goes, he needs to see the field the most during the preseason, but the league has already shifted to that, and it's already been that. Back in my day, the older guys played at least two games and called it good. We had four. Now you got three. If whatever team he were to go to, that starter has to know that the organization believes in you, but they think that this young man might have more talent than you when it's all said and done.
Now, for John Schneider, he has taken different kinds of swings at quarterback, so maybe it wouldn't be shocking to see him do this. Curtis, you pointed out that before bringing in Russell Wilson, the Seahawks had taken a couple different approaches to trying to find the quarterback, with Russell Wilson being like the fourth attempt. So John Schneider, not unfamiliar with different approaches to finding that guy.
Yeah, remember a guy named Charlie Whitehurst?
I sure do.
They traded for him year one of Pete Carroll and John Schneider here in Seattle when they had Matt Hasselbeck as the incumbent starter. And then Tavares Jackson was after Charlie Whitehurst and Matt Hasselbeck. And then they signed Matt Flynn to that deal that everybody panned years later because there was a guy named Russell Wilson that they drafted in the third round. So it took a few swings at the pinata before they were able to find their guy. And do I think the next guy after Geno Smith might be the long-term answer? I don't know. You know, you're going to have to take multiple shots.
Well, in different kinds of shots, right? Think of it like an investment portfolio that John's making right now. It's not just, I'm going to use first round pick, like so many organizations that we see, right? The Jets have tried a million different approaches. He's trying to build it up with like, all right, here's the deal. Maybe I'll sign in free agency with Geno Smith, who was a free agent. You know, maybe I'll go with the draft in the first round this year and take like Michael Penix, or maybe I'll trade up and get J.J. McCarthy. Maybe I'll trade for another team's, you know, first round bust and bring him in here for a low round pick and in a flyer. Like you said, Bump, there are risks to all of this. Well, you want to take a quarterback in the first round? Guess you aren't adding to the trenches. Guess you aren't adding to the defensive line. You want to trade for Justin Fields? Well, you're going to have to decide whether you want to pay him in a year. And even if he has a good year, are you ready to commit to that kind of money? Like, you don't get the 4 years of the rookie deal that you did with Russ. So there are risks with all of these things. But John Schneider seems open to risk.
Yeah, he does. And this is the time to do it. Because if you were to take a dip in production Obviously, the Seahawks have in the last couple years. I mean, they're both 9-8. 1 year you make the playoffs. But if you were to take a dip in wins and losses and how this offense looks, how this defense looks, well, you can't take even more dip because the defense wasn't very good last year anyway. But if you were to take a half step back, this is the year to do it, because I would hope that the 12s and the public understands that this is all brand new. Everything's new over there. You got a new staff, new players coming in, new philosophy, new culture, new scheme. There's going to be a learning curve here. So if he wants to roll the dice, this is the year to do it. I would just think if Fields were to be in the mix, they have seen enough to think he can beat out Geno. You're not just bringing him here to hang around and have fun and be a traditional backup quarterback. You're bringing him here because you think he can be a starter.
How about this from the 206? Do you think Geno could be part of the trade for Justin Fields? Here's the thing. If they trade for Justin Fields, there's a genuine curiosity as to whether or not he could be your guy. And I would guess that they aren't sold on Geno Smith for the next 10 years, the way that, you know, the Bills are for Allen or the Chiefs are for Mahomes, right? Like, it's a different kind of quarterback situation. Geno is better than Fields is right now. So you're giving up a more sure thing at quarterback for taking a flyer on someone who could be really great but hasn't proven nearly as much. So there's a risk there, I think, in parting ways with Geno just to roll the dice with Fields.
There was, now this is high school football, right? But I had a year where there was a senior quarterback. He had played receiver his first 3 years. His senior year, he wanted to get into the quarterback and kid could play. Had an arm. Knew the offense, but there is this young sophomore who I felt, man, if he can start for 2 years, by his senior year, we got a chance to win a championship. So I told the senior, I go, you've been a wide receiver, one of our best wide receivers. Just go ahead and play wide receiver and be good to go. I'm going to invest in this young guy. That's essentially what you would be doing and saying, yes, I know what Geno can do, and I believe in what he can do, but we got to give room for this other space to grow, and we think that he might be here for a while. Again, Geno's the guy until he's not, but if Fields is over here anytime soon, then Geno might not be the guy sometime soon.
So if you trade for Fields, knowing that you're going to have to make a decision whether to pay him and knowing you want to see as much as possible, would you wager Fields would be your starter week one?
It's a possibility.
Unless he loses the job. Okay, I'll say this. Is it, if you trade for Fields, in a weird way, his job to lose? I think John Schneider would say, no, absolutely not. It's Geno's job.
It's always Geno's job.
Yeah.
But they will give Fields opportunity during camp and during the preseason to take that job.
All right. Coming up next, Richard Sherman, Matt at the Seahawks. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Well, Richard Sherman is mad at the Seahawks. Why? Because they moved on once again from Bobby Wagner.
Bobby Wagner in Seattle should never leave Seattle. They made the mistake the first time. You should never leave it again. And John Schneider knows that. We've had this conversation. It's ridiculous that you're not signing it. He's not asking for a ton of money. Yeah, I'm not saying, hey, give him $15 million, pay him like a top linebacker. But you don't let him leave the building again. You owe him that. You owe him that. And people say loyalty, but you only hear the loyalty on the franchise's behalf. But when it's time to be loyal to a player, like you got to be loyal to a Bobby Wagner, then people turn a blind eye to it. They're like, well, I don't know if he's the player he used to be. He just came off a Pro Bowl season. You playing at a Pro Bowl level, they say, well, you're not the player he used to be. Because he was an outside of this world talent. Sorry, it just grinds my gears right now where people are asking loyalty from these players. Hey, take less money and stay with this team. As soon as you're not as quick as you used to be, as soon as your GPS says 17 instead of 18, they're going to cut you. There isn't loyalty, and it doesn't exist for players, and players don't owe it to these organizations.
Really two different points made by Richard Sherman here. What do you think about him?
I think he's right. There's no loyalty in the NFL.
No.
There's no loyalty in business, honestly. I know guys who are presidents and CEOs. If their homie, if their employee for years ain't getting it done in the fashion they want it done, they will fire them, and you will have to move on. I also do think that players are asked to take pay cuts and stay with the team, and you pull on the emotion of, I've been here for so long, I'm comfortable here, I just want to be a Seahawk or whatever. And some players do that. Sometimes you're at a point in your career where you don't want things to change, and I'm good here, so I will do that. I think both sides have the right to operate in any way they want to when it comes to this business thing. Now, as far as not letting Bobby leave the building, I wouldn't have let him leave because I don't know what the plan is to replace him or to replace that position. That's why I wouldn't let him leave. If I knew the plan and we had a target and we felt good about the target, felt good about the draft in year 12, 13, it makes sense that you let a guy like Bobby leave. Me personally, I would have kept him here, but for Sherm to be so upset about it and to really sound like he don't understand how the business goes, a business that he was in for like a decade, it makes me feel like he's caught up in the emotion of being a Seahawk and Legion of Boom and Bobby being who he is to this city, which Bobby is great for this city, but this is a business and it's a young man's game. Yeah. If they can go younger and cheaper, probably not even cheaper, but just younger at that position, then it makes sense to me why they would let Bobby walk.
Curtis, I'm bringing you in because you had a more fiery take than me, and I want to compliment Bump's take. You said if it was up to Richard Sherman, what?
If it was up to Richard Sherman, the entire Legion of Boom would still be employed by the Seahawks, and they would all be the highest paid guys on the team at age like 35, 36, 37 years old. Like, if Richard Sherman had it his way, Russell Wilson would have never gotten paid, and the Seahawks would have, you know, seen their title window close a lot sooner after the Legion of Boom years. Richard Sherman has always felt this way. This is nothing new, but, like, the league goes on, man. Like, these guys are going to all be done playing at some point. You're done playing, Sherm. Like, the league went on without you, we had Michael Bennett on the show last year, and he was like, just let us guys, like, just leave us alone.
No,
like,
seriously.
We're done playing,
like,
man.
The Legion of, and then rhyme it with Boom for any new iteration of the Seahawks defense. Just, like, let it go. Let it be part of a beautiful history and a beautiful story for Seattle. And Richard Sherman is right, like you said, Bump, about the second thing. And I think that he sounds like someone who's still harboring a lot of frustration about that. And it would be frustrating having been a player and hearing people constantly harp on players for going elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just heard Tuesday, right, debates about Tiki Barber saying, you're dead to me, to Saquon Barkley for going from the Giants to the Eagles. And then us saying, well, wait a minute, even if Tiki was being sarcastic, and it was a lighthearted conversation that was not as intense as it sounded just written out. Even if Saquon went to the Eagles, well, the Giants had a choice to pay Daniel Jones or pay Saquon, and they chose Daniel Jones. Like, for Saquon, he's like, well, man, if you're not going to build a Super Bowl team, if you're not going to pay me, if you're not going to do this, why? I've been here. I've tried. Like, the loyalty only exists for players. The expectation of loyalty is for players. For that, Richard Sherman is right. I also think that the reality of the NFL is that it is a business.
It is a business.
And if your inside linebackers turning 34 years old, I understand why a general manager would go, oh, let's see what we do. To your point, the reason I thought Bobby would stay is because they have no one else there. And so I'm still nervous about it. I'm like, I would have kept him.
I would have kept him for sure. It's, again, NFL, no freaking loyalty. This is just the way it is. They love you. Love you when you're in your prime. Oh, man, we love Bobby. We love Sherm. We love Earl. Before any off-the-field issues starts, you know how this game goes. As soon as you lose a step, as soon as there's some type of problem in the locker room or off the field, they start to look at you a bit different because Schneider knows he's going to be here. Mm-hmm. And it's his job to help build the best team that he can build. And he doesn't think that Bobby would be a part of putting the best 11 guys on defense on the field. Whether you agree with him or not, you're not getting paid to make those decisions, right? He has to live and die by every decision that he's making. It's just funny to me just how angry Sherm sounds. You know, this is a young man's game.
I think Sherm is still angry at the Seahawks.
Yeah,
I think that there
sure
is still a kind of, not resentment, but like a tension between Sherm and Seahawks fans, between Sherm and the Seahawks. I think that my pet theory has always been that Richard Sherman, who is one of the best Seahawks players ever, really bought into Pete Carroll's team, the vision, the belief, and then felt a sense of betrayal. And this is just a pet theory. I haven't talked to Richard Sherman about this. I don't talk to Richard Sherman at all. but it is a pet theory because I think that there is a risk when you're a player's coach and that eventually you have to turn your back on them and eventually you have to side with the team, and that would hurt as a player.
That's why you don't do business with family, man.
But that's kind of it. It's kind of the same kind of sentiment.
It is. You're doing business with your family.
You told me you believed in me. You made me buy in. Exactly. You told me these were the rules for the team and then I didn't see you follow them. And I think that, you know, obviously ego plays into this and all kinds of stuff. But, like, I think that that bridge has never been fully rebuilt. And this is knowing that Carroll and Sherm are cool. One of the last games of the season, they were on the field and, you know, like talking to each other, hugging, like everything was fine. But, like, there is a tension there between Seattle and
everything Sherm comes to an end. Fletcher Cox is no longer with the Philadelphia Eagles. How many guys actually play their whole careers with one team? The only guys that do are some of the greatest of all time. And Bobby is one of those. But everyone moves on. 95% of people move on. The greatest quarterback of all time moved on from the Patriots. There might be a time where the Chiefs are going to be done with Pat Mahomes. That's just how this thing goes. I guarantee you Josh Allen ain't going to finish his career with the Bills. I guarantee you Lamar Jackson ain't going to finish his career with the Baltimore Ravens. This is just what it is. Young man's game. There is no loyalty. Mm-hmm. Go where you are wanted, and that's exactly what Bobby Wagner did.
All right, we are heading to baseball at 11:45. Shannon Dreher joining us at noon, sending you to Cactus League play at 1, so we're going to stick with NFL free agency for just a little bit longer. The Athletic's Randy Mueller joins us next.